Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our number 888-318-7884. And when you talk about faith and science, when we do a program on faith and science, we get lots and lots of calls, and your calls are welcome, whether you are a believer or an unbeliever, whether the science seems clear to you or the science seems foggy to you, whatever your place is. In the world of both faith and science, you're welcome to call with a question. You certainly do not have to be a Catholic to call, 888-318-7884. But if we're going to talk about faith and science, we need an expert on faith and science. So Dr. Stacy Trisanko, scientist and theologian, is our guest this hour. She wrote a wonderful book. Well, she's written several wonderful books, but I always recommend Particles of Faith, which is about being a chemist and coming to Jesus. Dr. Stacy Trisanko, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Cy. It's always good to be here. I enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I love it when you're here, and I really do hope people will call with us. And the one thing I love about it, too, is there's no question that's too hard. You don't have to worry about stumping Stacy. Or if you're one of those people who wants to stump our guest, go ahead and give it a try, because she has she's a good-natured, well-educated scientist and theologian. And you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. If I asked you, Stacy, to give a talk on, say, angels and electromagnetism, could you do that?
Yeah.
You could?
Yeah. It's all fascinating. Like, it's the totality of everything. God, angels, electromagnetic radiation, us. Like, it's amazing.
It is, but now I saw the title of your talk at Notre Dame, and was it Seton Hall? Seton Hall, and it was something along the lines of angels and electromagnetism, or something, and like life among the invisibles.
Exactly, my life, life among the invisible. When you're thinking about God and angels, you're aware of the spiritual realm. But when I became Catholic, it was already a familiar way of thinking to me to kind of have like your head in the clouds all the time, but thinking about the atomic realm, because that's invisible too. And
right.
So I just added God and angels into my lexicon, and life is very full. But I sometimes have to remind myself of the physical world.
What do you mean you have to remind yourself of the physical? Because you live in these worlds that you've learned of invisible things, and you need to remember to have contact with the things that are actually visible and tactile?
To get outside of my head and to think about the things in real life that need to get done. I mean, it's a nerdiness, I guess you could call it, but it's fascinating. I mean, when I was a scientist, there would be so much going on that you have to think about. Here, I'm not saying I'm brilliant or anything, just like you have to think about things in a very abstract way in models in your mind. You have to move things around in your mind and figure out problems with things you can't actually go see and touch.
Right.
Unless
right.
you're going to do an experiment, but that can take forever. So you kind of have to remember to wake up out of that and like go drive your car somewhere.
Yeah. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. Your faith and science questions are welcome. It does strike me that for a Catholic person who has things like the Eucharist in our life, where the appearance and reality are not the same thing, modern science is actually kind of a good school for that, in that now we're like, you know, kids are fascinated when they learn about molecules and atoms or cells, because all of that stuff says, well, this desk is actually not what it appears to be. There's like the one thing we always learn, I don't know, sixth grade or something, it's actually more open space than solid. You know, like, whereas when you're a kid, you're like, what? But that kind of, it's almost like science has developed a sacramental view of the world.
Oh, I like that. I never heard it put like that before. That's pretty cool. I have to remember that. Thanks to Cy Kellett. You do. I mean, like the table being atoms, it's not that we contradict what we sense. Like if you feel a hard table, you really are feeling, you can trust your senses. You're touching a hard table. But the reason that it's hard is because of the forces among the atoms in the molecules that make up the wood of the table. They're interacting with the sensory receptors on your skin. So that there's just a lot more explanation to the feeling that you're having. And it's not to negate the feeling. It's just to say that we know so much more about why it is that we see things, that we hear things, that our hearts beat.
Yeah.
And when you open that up to children, they do love it. I find that my students love it a whole lot more when you tell them, this is God's handiwork. You're studying how God made things. And then they're like, even if they're not scientists, they're very excited about it. You've heard me say that a million times.
Yeah. But I never get tired of it.
It's true.
Yeah, because that's the thing that's true. I have to say, I've sometimes thought about as a child when science, when I learned science, if someone had said it that way, I think I might have had been more invested in it, that it would have seemed less like something you're preparing for the test and more like something where you're learning something important.
Yes. That's kids, whether they're little kids, high school kids, in college, young adults, they want things to fit together and make sense. And so you need to tell them that. You need to say the stuff you're learning about atoms. It's actually, this is happening in your body right now. Your body is made up of atoms. This is what's holding you together right now. This is how God is holding you in existence right now. It's part of the story. And whatever you learn in this scientific realm, you're just studying God's handiwork. And that's kind of what I talked about in that talk, electromagnetic radiation. That's light. That's light. And it, everything we see comes from electrons jumping around inside of atoms. And you don't really think about that unless you're taught to think about that. But when you do know, well, my hope is that when people hear me talk about it and they leave my talk, their life has changed. They look at the world differently.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think that's why people love coming to those talks, because the perspective that you have from both faith and science is one in which you do get a fuller view of a view that is, and that full, that view gives you a greater confidence. You don't just live in this random, weird world of random things.
No, I always say if the ancient Hebrew people could find their faithfulness in God because the sun and moon showed up every day, like there was regularity in nature, how much more can we find faithfulness in God because we know that the electron jiggles 9,192,631,770 times in the cesium-133 atom every second.
Yeah.
That's how we define the atomic clock. Like, we ought to be like, thank you, God. I mean, God, I've said it before too. That's my answer to suffering. When I feel like I don't want to turn things over to God, I'm like, if God can do that, he's got this. We're going to be okay. Things are going to be fine.
That's a wonderful view. Fine. Yeah. And I mean, I guess we've all probably memorized the wiggle of the cesium atom. I mean, all of you guys in there, right? You know how many times the electron on the cesium atom?
It's a great dinner trick.
Yeah, but don't bring cesium to dinner. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our old friend Steve in Napomo, California, watching on YouTube. You are up first today, Steve. Go ahead with your question for our good friend, Dr. Stacy Trisangos.
Thank you, Si. Ask Edgar about the joke I told him earlier. Anyways, Stacy, needs your help about the three-person baby. Are you aware of that? That just came out recently.
Yeah, it's in my email. Yes, I'm looking at it right now.
In Great Britain, I think they took genetic material from three different parents and made one little baby. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about, Steve?
Yeah, they do the maternal spindle transfer or a pronuclear transfer.
So you want to know from a scientific or a moral
point? What the position of the church is on this?
Yeah, okay, Stacy. What would the church have to say about this?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, it gets back to the dignity and sanctity of life, that children have a right to be born of a mother and a father in the marital embrace. And so the dignity and sanctity of the human life, it gets back to also the unity and procreative aspect of marriage. So it's like an IVF thing. You don't want to take that break that unity of marriage and put it in a lab. You don't want to break that unity of marriage with contraception or any of that. So it breaks some very fundamental primal things that are part of our human dignity. It messes that up in the name of science. It takes the conjugal act away from the mother and father and puts it in the lab. It creates a human that may, if this were to continue, may or may not even know who the mother, biological mother and father are. And then you bring in this genetic changing, you are going to change things. Maybe even, I don't remember if this changes the, I think it does. You're going to change things in the germline that you don't know what consequences that's going to have in successive generations. So I know it's not just Catholics that are raising the ethical flag on this kind of thing. And it's like so many of these things, it happens in little tiny steps. So the one little, you know, it's a big breakthrough, but then people say, well, it's not that big a deal ethically. We haven't really gone, we're not cloning humans in the lab yet. We're not actually making three parents to make a baby. This was just one experiment that had these results. Yeah, but they don't ever stop. They don't stop trying to go further. They're not going to stop trying till they can clone humans in the lab, is what I think.
Steve, I know you're not Catholic, Steve, but does that match with your moral intuition about the thing?
Very much so. You're right. It's in vitro, on and on. I just was wondering if the Catholic stance was different than what I thought. You nailed it. Because I agree with 100% what you're saying.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. I think there are some people, Stacy, who in art, they'll do this. You know, a comedian will do it as a comic. A scientist will do it in science. Is that this is an important thing that I'm doing, and you're... And you can't just say apply moral standards to it. It's kind of beyond your moral standards, because science has to progress, or for my art I have to do it. This just seems to be the spirit of our age, that this almost a scientist, you'd be interfering with his or her self-expression as a scientist if you said,
yes,
stop cloning babies like this.
Yes, and the problem is that people don't care to know about the history of these issues. And so, you know what they say about history, it repeats itself, or it rhymes with itself.
Yeah.
People don't care. People don't stop to think about that. And, you know, I really do believe it's up to the people of virtue, of faith, who are looking at the bigger picture, to keep saying, you got to watch out for this. You got to watch out for this. There's so many bioethical issues. Contraception. You know, the church was saying a long time ago, this isn't a good idea. Things like are not going to happen well. And some people listen and some people don't, but we still have to keep saying it. And I firmly believe, because I've studied the history of science with Father Stanley Yawkey, I firmly believe that we are still living in the scientific revolution. Not to be dramatic, but science is exploding in our time. I mean, just look at your cell phone, how much it changes over the years. We're learning to do things at such a fast rate that now more than ever, Catholics need to know about virtue. They need to be out there speaking up about why to seek the good. We can't go to evil means. We can't break things that are good, or we're going to regret it. I mean, it's kind of like when you have a high school kid that says, I'm going to drop out of school, and you're trying to tell them this isn't a good idea. You're going to regret it. Sometimes you can't convince them that you're right, but you have confidence that you are. And so you just kind of like see it through. You keep walking it through.
Right. Keep trying to communicate it despite the resistance to hearing it. We got to take a quick break. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist and theologian, is our guest. We're talking about faith and science. If you have a question about faith and science, whatever your own position on faith or science is, you are welcome here today. 888-318-7884.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Stacy Trusenko is our guest. She's a chemist. She worked for, I don't remember, I think it was DuPont. Was it DuPont?
Yes.
DuPont, mm-hmm. Trying to figure out how trees make energy or get, you know, photosynthesis. Guess what? She didn't, because it's really complicated. But I'm sure she advanced the science in some impressive way, but still trying to figure that one out. A chemist and theologian. And now studying philosophy as well, I think. Are you a scientist, theologian, and philosopher? One thing I was wondering about, if this is too personal, you don't have to answer it, but as a chemist, are you better at getting stains out than other people? Like, I feel like I would be better at it if I had a PhD in chemistry.
Yeah. Dissolves like. So just, you got to know whether things are polar or nonpolar and the nature of the stain. And you also don't want to dissolve the fabric. So you kind of have to balance all that stuff out.
How do you know I don't want to dissolve the fabric? Maybe that's my fashion.
It could happen.
Jason in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are next, Jason. We're very grateful for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Hey, Dr. Stacy. So I have a question in regards to evolution. The question is that, you know, a lot of people, more atheists and even some Christians, say that we, you know, the evolution of one species to another. However, scientifically, we haven't found any transitional fossils where, for example, like a wolf is turning into a monkey, is turning into a human or whatnot. How is that explained?
Okay. Cut me off if I go too long. Transitional fossils are, they're like the missing links, the thing that come in between, you know, you got the monkey and then you see a transition and then you've got the next species. The thing is, the way evolution works, in a sense, everything is a transitional fossil. I mean, it depends on how you define that word. And we have to remember that in the fossil record, it's like you're putting together a puzzle. When the anthropologists find a fossil, they have to date it and they have to figure out where it belongs in the body and what that body was and where it fits in with the diversity of life. They have to classify it and categorize it. There are so many missing pieces that, you know, there could be transitional fossils. We just haven't found them. There could be like what you're talking about, transitional fossil. But everything, if the diversity of life is a continuum, like, and by continuum, I mean down to the individual level. What I mean by that is when a mother and a father with their genetics come together and make a baby, the baby is not a clone of the father. The baby is not a clone of the mother. The baby has the genetics of the same species because it's born of that mother and father, but it has unique genes of its own. That's a combination of those. And if they have a second child, that second child isn't going to be exactly the same. Even if they have identical twins, they're going to grow up and their genes are going to express slightly differently depending on their environments and their experiences. So it's all a transition. In the fossil record, they haven't found everything. And I think they have found what scientists would call transitional fossils. Now, the people who say there aren't any transitional fossils would probably disagree and say, no, that's not what we mean by a transitional fossil. So you kind of have to be really clear about what you're saying in the definition. The church teaches this. If you are okay with the science of evolution, the theory of evolution, what we're really doing, and I was just saying to Cy that we live in this explosion of science. We're living at a time when so much new scientific knowledge is being gained. My approach to evolution is I just sit back because I'm not an evolutionary biologist. I just read what they find and I listen to what the experts are saying and I just take it all in, knowing that theories change over time as more data becomes available. If you remember what I said, science is the study of the handiwork of God. I'm not looking at evolution thinking it's going to prove or disprove God's existence any more than my son would look at a plate of spaghetti on the table and wonder if it proves or disproves mom's existence. God created the world like a mother makes a dinner. God created the world. And when we study science, we're learning more about how he created it. And with evolution, we kind of have to say the whole genetic idea of evolution makes sense, that genes get passed on to generations and that species would diverge and that new traits would appear depending on natural selection in the environment. That all makes sense. We don't have the full answer. And if the real question is, well, then how did humans emerge? Don't forget, God created this world. God could have worked a miracle for the first human with the rational soul, body and soul united, composite. We have a spiritual soul, which other animals don't have. So I don't find anything in evolution that, I don't know why people argue about it, to be honest. I don't see what the big controversy is about.
Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, like my thing was like Noah's Ark, all the animals, you know, when the Bible talks about them, it's more like the family or the genus of the animal. Mm-hmm. And they kind of interbred and created different species and newer species of the same family or whatnot. But you,
You found it helpful, though, what Dr. Stacy said.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Well, yeah. I think so, too, Jason. And that's awful nice of you to say it. I'll tell you what.
Thank you.
Let's send Jason a book. And he'll have to tell Edgar which Catholic Answers book he'd like. But any friend of Dr. Stacy's is a friend of ours. Andrew in Michigan is next listening on 990 AM. Andrew, go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trisankos.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question that is, if God is the concept of infinity, is he like an ever-expanding infinity, always becoming more? Or is he like the set of all sets infinity? And depending on which is which, how does that impact our finite existences?
It was a little choppy, okay. But you got all that?
Yeah, say it one more time. Let's see.
Really? You want to
answer? If God is infinity.
Is he like an ever-expanding infinity, always becoming more? Or is he like the set of all sets infinity? And depending on which, how does that impact our finite existences?
Okay, you might have stumped me there. So the way we talk about God, so this is not science, this is getting more into theology or philosophy, but the way we talk about God, I take it from the beginning of the Summa Theologia, where St. Thomas Aquinas is saying, how do we know God exists? And so I'm getting to your question, but how we know God exists, he's that thing than which nothing greater can exist. God is simple, meaning there's no parts to God. God is infinite. God is all-powerful, all-knowledgeable. But also, we can't fully express God. So we can know that God exists through reason, and then we can know something about God, like that the Holy Trinity and the Incarnation, through divine revelation, because God had to tell us that. We couldn't have figured out the Trinity just through reason alone. But then, we can't say exactly what God is. So I don't know if it's even a question that we can ask or answer to wonder if God is always expanding, because then that presumes some shape. God is being itself. You don't even, my priest said in seminary, one of his professors wrote on the board, "Does God exist?" And my priest said that they were all stumped as seminarians, like, "Yeah, well, we're here in seminary. Of course we think God exists." But the priest wrote the Latin for "God is existence." What he was trying to teach them is that it's not even really the right question to say, "Does God exist?" God is existence. And so I don't know if there's an answer. That's the best I can do on answering your question about, is God ever expanding? When you say that, I'm thinking about the steady state universe, or the universe expanding now, the way we think of the universe. But we don't think of God that way. He's outside of time and space.
Got to take a quick break, Andrew. We'll be right back. And you can finish, Dr. Stacey.
Okay.
Are you ready to defend your faith in a world of unbelief? Join us at the 9th Annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. This year's theme, I Believe in God, and it'll help you provide clear and charitable answers to atheism, agnosticism, and plain old indifference. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us in San Diego from September 21st through 24th as we welcome our special guest, Dr. Scott Hahn, and an all-star lineup of great Catholic speakers. Spend quality time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and enjoy 4 days of fun, fellowship, and adoration of the Almighty. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register. Enter promo code EARLY and save $50. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Tomorrow on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
That's tomorrow on Mortal Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and our guest is Dr. Stacey Trusenko, scientist and theologian, the author of the book Particles of Faith and many other things, also a very popular speaker all around the world. All around the world, they get to hear Dr. Stacey Trusenko. On the line, we have Andrew in Michigan, who wanted to know, ask a kind of a quantifying question about God, like what kind of an infinity is God? And Stacey, you were referring to Aquinas in saying that we can't say what God is. That's not that's not a human capability to say what God is.
Right. We can't say what God. We can know that God exists. We can know God through analogy, so we can make analogies. God is like this. God is like that. We can know what God is not. We can say God is not falsity. God is not contradiction. God is not hate. And a lot of things, you can go very far with that, but we can never fully define God because it's beyond our human comprehension. And then as far as being humans and us being finite, I think how I would say that is we're creatures. We are created by God. We're part of this universe that God created. But as human, we're a special kind of creature because we are a composite body and rational soul, meaning we have a spiritual soul that's subsistent. It has its own existence. Independent of our body, even though it's natural to be united with our body. So we kind of have like a part in the spiritual world and a part in this physical world. And so God loves us and draws us to him. And our life is to learn more about God so we can love him more and ultimately be with him forever in heaven. So that, I think that's how I would put all your question together.
Andrew, I'd like to send you a copy of a book that we have by Kevin Vost, who we lost this year, but wonderful, wonderful writer. It's called What is God? And a lot of this Aquinas that Dr. Stacy Trusenkos was just kind of giving the a hint of, he gets into more deeply there. So if you'd like the book, What is God? Hang on, and Edgar will get your information, and we will send it out to you. We're talking about faith and science. If you've got a faith and science question, we've got one line open. We'll try our very best to get you on with our guest, Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, 888-318-7884. Going now to Peoria, Illinois. Gene in Peoria, listening on 94.3 FM. Glad you're here, Gene. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy.
Thank you. As I was listening to the gentleman who was talking about the three-parent child, I was thinking about a movie that came out quite some time ago called Jurassic Park, you may remember, and the character of Jeff Goldblum came up with, he had such a brilliant thought, and that is that science is moving so fast to find out what we can do. We haven't slowed down to think about it enough to figure out whether or not we should. And I think perhaps ethics has not received the attention and the consideration that it should.
I think you are going to find agreement in Dr. Stacy. Dr. Trusenkos, what do you think?
Thank you so much for saying that. I mean, it's really fulfilling to hear you say that. My husband was quoting that very same line to me the other day in the kitchen, where we do a lot of our work. We do a lot of work in the use of aborted children in research, fetal tissue research. And I'm writing a book right now about the history of it. And I have to take a break sometimes because I can't keep reading scientific paper after scientific paper talking about how they put the corpses of these aborted children on the lab bench and dissect them. And I was reading papers where they weren't even waiting till they were dead. They were taking them out of the mother's womb and using them as a biological machine for 10 minutes before they killed them. And the dissecting them is what killed them. And this was like in the 70s. And we were talking about that. Like, we're so far down the road with fetal tissue research right now. I feel like it's almost futile to try to tell the world we shouldn't be doing this, because they say, well, if you're going to abort the children anyway, it's more ethical to use their bodies in research than to throw them away and waste it. And you're just like, you're missing the whole point. It's very disturbing. So, I mean, there's so many ethical issues, and you're so right. And I'm in my 50s now, so I've learned not to get too much into despair. I've learned not to get too upset that we live in a fallen world. It just is. We just have to keep speaking. More people need to go study bioethics and become educated on the nuances of these debates and these arguments, and just, you know, be like this. Just keep talking, keep saying it, keep telling people. And, you know, you can find ways to do it where you don't make everybody mad all the time. But sometimes you do need to make people mad. Sometimes you just need to be that trusted person people can come to when they realize they shouldn't have done something. You're so right. And the things going on in technology are one thing, but the things going on in bioethics are, I don't know what it's, I'm afraid one day we're going to have cloned humans walking around who were created for no other reason but for research. And it will fall to Catholics to figure out how to teach the world how to love those people.
But, right. And everyone deserves that love. That's why this is the horror, is because that child, that dissected child, deserved to be loved and to have a life. Gene, what a wonderful point you made. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
and If you ever want to call and quote Jurassic Park again, any other part of it, you're very welcome here. Alan in Missouri listening on the Covenant Network. You are up next, Alan. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist and theologian.
Thank you. So my question was kind of about carbon dating. And I think it is still legit, but there's apparently some, I think they're not Catholic, but some Christians that put up a website about proving it wrong. I haven't got to see it yet, and it's hard to find it, seems. But would it be rude of me to maybe not quite believe it as much as I did before, or should I stick with what we've
learned
about carbon dating?
Yeah. So what about that? Doubting science, like the science of carbon dating, for example. Where do you come down on that?
Well, carbon dating is another one of those things where you're kind of like, picture yourself with your eyes closed, probing into the dark, trying to figure out what you can find. And it's a very well-developed science. It's just that when you have a sample, it's more difficult to analyze sometimes because you dig something up out of the ground. Well, how old is it? What else was around it? What else happened to it? But carbon dating, so I want to say this as an aside. The radiometric dating and carbon dating itself, it comes from a process within atoms, their decay, the rate of decay, that is very, very, it's like I was saying about the cesium-133 atom and the jiggling electron that marks off how we count our seconds. It's a very faithful, a very predictable process. So if radiometric and carbon dating were wrong, everything we know about the atom would also be wrong. And if it were wrong, I'm not kidding, we wouldn't be able to make digital phones. We wouldn't be able to be manipulating atoms the way we do so well now. So we have a lot more to learn, but what we have learned, it works. We have gained knowledge of the atomic realm. And so the dating process itself is pretty solid. When you get into analyzing messy data, then there can be questions. But again, on something like that, like if you want to be skeptical about it, the church says that's totally up to our own judgment, whether we believe what scientists are saying or not. The church isn't going to tell us whether to believe a scientist or not. Personally, again, when it comes to things like that, I just take a wait and see. If I read something and I see what they're doing, if you read the scientific papers where they're actually analyzing the radiometric data, you get a sense for how messy the interpretation can be. So I just read that stuff. I take it as it comes. New information, I try to understand what they're doing. I try to understand what they're saying. Never in any of that do I ever think, oh, God might not exist. Or just because this is, I don't need science to shore up my faith. I come to science with a strong faith already. So I don't have really a reason, as far as my faith is concerned, to wonder about radiometric dating. That doesn't mean you can't disagree with what some of the scientists are saying, though.
I'm going to have to leave it there, Alan. Thank you very much for the call. More calls on the line, but we got to take a break. We'll be right back and take more calls on faith and science for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. If you've got one, you are welcome here. 888-318-7884.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Each
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist and theologian, is here with us. That sounds like superpowers when I say it that way. Scientist and theologian. It sounds like you should have some kind of a cape. But maybe you do. Maybe you do. I don't know, and I don't judge.
Whatever. I have a cowboy hat.
Oh, that's right. You and the other Stacy have cowboy hats.
Exactly.
Because you have a friend, Stacy, and the two of you, are you still doing the podcast?
Yeah, off and on. We're taking a little break right now because I'm trying to write that fetal tissue book. But
Yeah.
We're still Stacy and Stacy. She got me to wear turquoise jewelry. Like, it's the only color of anything I own.
Oh, that's good. Well, she's very good then. I appreciate her efforts. All right, back. Oh, look at this. Every line full. Come on, people. Chris in California, listening on the EWTN app. Chris, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist, theologian, and cowgirl.
Oh, cowgirl, too. Okay.
Yes.
So my question originally, I felt a little bit too emotionally involved with him, so I started to try and come up with a different question. My original question had to do with something like having a finding such as in atmospheric scientists specific to like Tyson Tip and challenging somebody else's finding with observations while not really being in the scientific community and really not having much in the way of credibility other than just physical photographic evidence of an instrument that measured something. But I was feeling kind of emotionally involved with that. And I don't know that that's really appropriate to question you about. And so you made a comment about how to love cloned people, and I just was thinking about that. And the Uyghur in China, we understand, are a population that exists for organ harvesting forced by the Communist Party of China. So we have populations that are not clones, but we do, to some extent in the States, have some incidents where people have bargained off their or somebody else's organs. So that was challenging me to think about how to love somebody in somewhat of a situation like that. Being cloned for such a purpose was a challenging thought. But then my thoughts, bear with me. Then my thoughts transitioned to something. It's scientific to the extent that Marxism was developed as a science. And I know that the church condemned so much of it. And I think it's critical to recognize that denying people private property, however little or great, is theft. It takes away from a person. I don't know which pope it was that said, you know, to take away the fruits of one's own labor from one's own land, or even if it's somebody else's land and it's your own labor, there's theft involved. And that's just an injustice that should not be tolerated.
Hey, Chris, I hate to do this to you, but there's something funny in the line, and it's getting hard to make out what you're saying. Do you want to give Stacy a quick question?
Oh, maybe that's a fan in the background. Well, so the basic question is, you know, what kind of advice do you have to people who do publish their own works, their own observations, but have something that is credible as an observation to put forward into, you know, how do you get that recognized to challenge world records on these that have been standing and so on? Do you have any, have you had any experience with that? Do you know anything other than having the World Meteorological go over the area where the finding has occurred to see if that, in fact, could actually happen?
So your question is, if you have a finding yourself, how do you get it out there? Is that your question?
Not in terms of self-publishing, but actually challenging without having any real credibility other than the finding itself, the observation itself.
Yeah. So just have it be accepted in the scientific community.
Yeah, I would, if you have something like that, find a scientist, find someone who would be able to analyze it, look at it, talk about it with you, give you an opinion. Maybe you find a handful of scientists and get several different opinions. But if it's a finding and it's got scientific value, if it's adding new knowledge to a field in science, then if you find the right scientist, that person can make it into a research project. That person can publish a scientific paper about it. So, you know, it's true in scientific journals, they're not going to put, like, I could not publish in a scientific journal today because I'm not working at a university in a lab. I'm working in my home writing and teaching. So you need to find someone who is in a position that could publish and talk to them and listen to their expert opinion too. And maybe collect, so it's kind of like going to a doctor, collect several opinions. But if there's something to it, then somebody might want to publish it. There's a whole, I mean, I can't promise that somebody will want to, but that's the pathway to getting it into a scientific journal.
Thank you very much, Chris. Sorry we started to break up there with you a little bit. Lots of folks on the line, so on we go. Patricia in Pennsylvania watching on YouTube. You are up next. Patricia, go ahead with your question for Stacy Trusenkos.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I had a sister who's passed on now, and she was told from a scientific standpoint that there are gay creations in the world, and that was authored by God. And I think that's part of what drew her to a certain comfortability about her own sexuality. And so I probably misheard what was said previously, but I thought she said, well, God is still creating and is still making, say, adjustments in his creation. And I thought, I hope I misunderstood that, because people could take that and run with it and say, so therefore, now we have people who can decide whether they're male or female or what their attraction is. So I just wanted to clarify that, and hopefully, you know, just misunderstood what you said.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I said God is changing human nature. I mean, God is holding everything in existence, is what I said. God is holding all of the electrons and all the atoms in your body in existence right now. Human nature is something that we have learned through philosophy and also through theology from divine revelation about the Holy Trinity. We came to understand our own spiritual powers of intellect and will through the divine revelation of the Holy Trinity. And then through philosophy, we came to understand that we're body and soul composites, spiritual soul. So are humans still evolving? If that's the question, I don't know if scientifically there's an answer to that. I think there are people who say that humans have indeed evolved over the years. There's something about lice and fur or something that humans have evolved. They've evolved in their tolerance of milk, I think. So there can still be evolution, but I don't think, the way it is right now, mankind has spread out throughout the earth and we populate the earth, and we're clearly different from all the other animals. And that's where we are now. I can't really say what's going to happen in the future, but human nature is human nature. This is how we are. As it relates to the homosexuality, I think there are some people who really struggle with it, but I think that's very rare. Scientists have not found a gay gene. They have not found anything genetic that says you're just born that way. So that, I mean, that's all. We did a whole show on that one time, Sai, back in like 2018, I think, on the studies on the gay gene.
I remember that.
So yeah. That doesn't mean, so I think at the same time, some people struggle with it, but I don't think there's a genetic basis for it, or science hasn't shown us there's a genetic basis for it. And so we're kind of back in that position. Well, what do we do then if somebody says, I'm gay? Well, we love them. We speak the truth, but we still love that person. You so many things you have to do that you know the person is going to, I mean, sex outside of marriage is wrong. And so whether it's homosexual acts or whether it's heterosexual acts outside of marriage, it's wrong. So we have to love all those people, the people that are having sex outside of marriage for whatever reason. We have to lead them to the way to be happy, the way to live, to be fully human and practice virtue and seek God.
I just want to follow up on Patricia's question, because it strikes me that I think a lot of people are amazed, I'm among them, at how quickly the whole transgender idea became the idea that everybody has to hold. It became the vogue, and so much so that you hear really extraordinary stories of bullying of people who say, nah, I don't think so. You're not even allowed to say, I don't think so. But it seems to me that there is no science here that I can't think of anyone who's putting out a scientific study that says, you know, it seems all vague, and we have this, it seems more like a religious belief than a science-based belief, this idea that, yeah, I'm a man, but my gender doesn't match with my biology. Those are two different categories. That seems like mysticism. That doesn't strike me as scientific in the least. But I wonder if you would agree with that or disagree with that, Dr. Tsengos.
Oh, I agree with what you're saying. It is perplexing to us parents. I mean, I've heard that the language around the transgender movement was specifically targeted at mothers to make them feel guilty into accepting it. And I felt it. I don't understand it. I have literally asked people about it, and their answer is, in my mind, I can be whatever I want to be. It doesn't matter what my body is. And I mean, that's totally going in the wrong way philosophically. That's dualism, but it's like a super extreme dualism.
Yeah, right.
Where, you know, I want to just, and I do say to those, like, why can't you just be, I'm sorry you don't think I'm sorry you can't just be loved like you are. I'm sorry people haven't convinced you that you're worth loving just like you are.
Yeah.
And right. I'm very worried about the health consequences too. This is a very, very troubling issue for me personally.
This is one of those, like the story that you told earlier about the baby, the unborn child. This is one where you cringe because you know that the 15-year-old girl, the 16-year-old girl right now who's mm-hmm. being affirmed by everyone and getting affirming treatments and all that, is going to be unable to bear children and is going to be physically scarred for the rest of her life because of all these loving and affirming people.
Who are poisoning her.
Yeah. Right. So like from a medical, from the perspective of a chemist, a science, like this is just poison that you're putting in an adolescent's body. That it's fair to say that. You're just poisoning them.
They're convincing those girls that they're not good enough just like they are. And so they're going to go through all of these surgeries and medicines and wreck their bodies. And long after those people who are affirming them are gone, those poor women are going to have to deal with the consequences of that surgery and those hormones. They're going to be left with, I mean, probably shorter lives. And it's very heartbreaking. There's so many things like that going on now. I know that Catholics feel worried. We don't know what to do. All I know to do is seek heaven yourself, pray hard, and speak the truth, and keep asking God what it is he wants you to do. I pray every day, God, grant me the grace to do your will, because I'm a mother of seven. I'm dealing with those issues, Si.
Sure,
and,
right.
And it's very scary. I sometimes feel like that Maccabees mother who the king murdered her seven sons right in front of her. I feel like it's the frog in the pot, not to mix metaphors, but I feel like it's happening in slow motion in front of mother's eyes now, that we're feeding our kids to this culture and it's butchering them.
It's Stacy, so well said. Dr. Stacy Trusenko has been our guest. You can you should check out her book, Particles of Faith, if you are at all interested in the conjunction of faith and science, not the battle between faith and science, but the conjunction. And the conjunction of the two is the human person who can have faith and can do science. Check it out, Particles of Faith. Dr. Trusenko, is always a great pleasure. Love talking with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Cy.
And that does it for us. I can't believe it, but it does. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.